Hey everybody, interesting show this morning. We weren't able to do it on Twitter Spaces because of a technical issue, so we took to Discord voice chat and actually got a really sizable turnout and some new speakers, so it was a good time. We discussed where we're at in the NFT market. You know, things are really slow, there's isolated pumps. We make some comparisons to earlier crypto markets. We talk about the merge that's upcoming, a lot there. We also talk about some other projects like 10KTF. We talk about 8Liens and the other projects that are getting some attention right now. Someone talks about ENS as well. Overall, pretty good show. As usual, all of our content is sponsored by FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code TheNifty on your FTX mobile app.
Live from the Portal Discord, ladies and gentlemen. If you've never been here before, welcome. We do paddle people when they come in for the first time as an initiation thing. So do be careful of getting paddled on your way in. What I will say, too, is it's actually pretty cool that when I speak, my Rust PFP gets animated. But when I stop, it stops. Yep. You know, that's actually props to Discord on that. They got that right, but they didn't get basic audio shit right. But anyway, this is the morning show. We got over 500 people in here. That's great to see. That's amazing conversion from Twitter. It's Friday, and I feel like in order for us to get in the groove, I think we should just start with Signal's weather report. I think we should just get right into Signal's weather report because that gives the show structure. So why don't we, if Sig has her audio on point, why don't we just start with her weather report and we'll start rolling. Oh, no.
I can't hear her.
I know.
I can do the weather report.
You don't have the weather report. One second. Well, Signal didn't actually email it to me this morning.
Sig, so if you can figure out your audio.
You're muted right now.
You're muted now.
So you just need, now you're unmuted.
You're going to have to go into your voice settings and make sure that the
push to talk. What's going on?
What, say it again,
easy. Rug left and right.
I'm saying it's probably push to talk. They probably have to hit like the space bar or enter key.
It's
usually what Discord defaults to. Just off the cuff weather report by Captain Kicks. I'm on a beautiful Discordian stage with lots of people I love and know. Let's get right into the details. Today is Friday. I don't know the day in August, but I'm sure plenty of you do. But what's more important, OpenSea barely hit that $20 million volume. Now that sounds good at first glance, but when you factor in that ETH's at 1800, volume got a little weak yesterday, especially after a big blow-up day the previous day before. We have Bitcoin sitting just below $24,000. Bitcoin, in a nice way, is dragging ass. Pretty much the only coin you want to be in right now is Ethereum, hanging out just shy of 1900. And on that note, we have some big news. Vitalik said they have an official hash rate for the merge, and it's looking like it's going to land on September the 15th. So mark your calendars. There's going to be a lot of merge happening on September 15th. Let's get into the details on the movers and shakers on the OpenSea front. We got Rare Apepe leading the volume once again, albeit pretty weakly, only at about 500 ETH, but that floor sitting at 0.85. A little bit of action in the CryptoPunks realm. They did just shy of 500 ETH in volume. Crowd favorite Eight Aliens. That floor is just developing a nice little range in that half an ETH area. So it's at 0.52 right now. It went as high as 0.8, I want to say. Now it's leveling out right there. We talked about it a lot on the show yesterday, so I won't go into details there. Easy is currently driving down to Florida to move to Miami, but what's exciting them even more than that is that other DEETH's price continues to fall. He famously said that it was going to one ETH when other DEETH's was at five. It's at 1.93 right now. Moonbirds trying to find a floor. They're sitting at 13.88. If you don't know, which you should, Moonbirds had a little bit of an issue with Kevin Rose abruptly switching things to CCO. That floor is taking a little bit of a beating. We got Munape Yacht Club at 15.55. One of the, there was a revolt over there in the ape section of the community after Big Brother Maciej's marketplace got shunned in favor of Magic Eden. So he put a little pressure on that floor. A crypto Twitter favorite, Pudgy Penguin, has been making a surge lately. It's at 2.68 right now. Pretty wild. I thought that project was dead a long time ago. We also have a little bit of action in the Psychedelic Anonymous floor. It's trying to get above 1 ETH right now for the Genesis collection.
It dropped below, you mean?
But I thought it was below 1 ETH for a while.
It wasn't yesterday. It was above 1. So,
looks like
it's imploding.
Looks like those tough questions you asked him on his interview didn't work out so well for him, but probably worked out pretty well for you.
Now I'm just absolutely filthy rich thanks to asking hard questions.
Your big short position on that collection. Well done. In another example of Kix just losing money left and right in the past couple of months, Clone X is below an 80 floor at 7.69. Ouch. Seems like a lot of projects are repricing because of the surge ahead of the merge for ETH. But also there's just some weak NFT volume outside of a big Wednesday that we had. But that's it for your impromptu weather report. I know it was a little all over the place. I was literally reading off of my tiny little phone. I didn't have a weather report in front of me. Back to you in the studio. Hope you all have a great weekend.
Well, look, great job. And thanks for wishing us a great weekend. I don't know if that means that you're going to leave the show for the day.
Peace out.
The other thing is that if people are also listening to the Twitter show, definitely let me know if the audio abruptly starts coming out of the Twitter show, because I feel like that's not an impossibility. So that's something that we probably should just be aware of, because we might be able to shift back to Twitter here in the next hour. But regardless, yeah, I mean, look, we got the blue chip NFTs have been slowly bleeding, right? There's no other way to put it. They're just slowly bleeding. And then you're getting random isolated pumps where you get a free mint, like rare a Pepe, that ends up having a crazy run up to one ETH. And then what I would describe as like relatively weird price action between 0.6 and 1 ETH over and over again. Like all of a sudden in a 30-minute span, it pumps from 0.6 to 1 ETH, then back down to 0.6. I tweeted about this yesterday. A lot of this shit feels weirdly coordinated. You got aliens hanging out at 0.52. And then the rest of the market, yeah, is just a slow bleed minus some of these intense pumps like Digit Daigaku or whatever the hell it is that had the most face-melting rip out of everything. You know, I was talking to Giancarlo yesterday on the phone, and I was comparing this to, like, you know, in between cycles historically with Bitcoin, what those things must have felt like. And it's like, you know, in the moment, it just feels like everything's going down. At some point we're going to find a bottom, but like, I just wonder where we're actually at in the cycle here. And I think all eyes are literally on Ethereum, because we basically, like DC investors said, we have literally the biggest event in the history of crypto since the advent of Ethereum. Or you could make a case,
since Bitcoin.
Well, you say since Bitcoin,
I guess the creation of Ethereum
Ethereum, the only other event you could argue would be the creation of Solana. I know Easy would probably argue that, but like, I feel like that's not even as significant.
Yeah, no one really cares about that blockchain.
I don't know. Like, based on what I said, does anyone have any kind of like thoughts on any of that? Like where we're at? And
I don't think that all of the blue chip are slowly bleeding. Like CryptoPunks are up substantially.
The only one that's up is that. Other deeds bleeding, Moonbird's bleeding, Mutant's bleeding, everything's bleeding.
Well, other deeds aren't a blue chip. They are run by Yuga, though. But
punks are up over the past, you know, 90 days. They're down still substantially from their peak of like, you know, 400K.
We were discussing this on a call yesterday. I mean, as a whole, it's also kind of exhausting the sort of format that the whims of the market on the NFT front, basically, right now is just like, there's nothing like super exciting. We're getting these short-term pumps. So yeah, it's I guess I'm mostly in agreement. That said, actually, when I look at it, the apes have come down some, so that's interesting. Punks are back within like 5 ETH of striking distance. So it's, yeah, it is interesting. It's an odd time in the market. There's still volume, but all the volume is among these like short-term pumps. And it's not clear that any of these have any sort of lasting capability. And if ETH crashes again, which who knows, that was like the anticipated thing. Everyone was saying that, but no one has any idea that then, yeah, then all these NFTs will drop in price even further.
What's fair value for a mutant ape? You know what I mean? Like, what is fair value? Right now, the floor is $29,000. Is fair value for a mutant ape?
10 grand.
Okay. If you could buy a share of Oscar the Grouch, how much would it be worth? That's how much a mutant is worth.
but you know what I mean, though? It's like if a mutant ape is 29 grand right now, then what is truly fair value? Is it $11,000? Is it $18,000? Like, why?
Well, I'd love to. I think Spencer's trying to chime in because I bet he has something interesting to say because, like, fair value is subjective, right, Theo? And it's like dependent on market conditions, like, because there's no fundamental value to these things. So you can't get like a price to book ratio. But what were you going to say, Spencer?
Well, I was going to say a couple of things. First, I'm not going to let Nick's comment that other deeds are not a blue chip slip by. It's one of the highest volume collections ever in terms of transaction volume. It's super liquid. And I think people get like faked out by other deeds because the floor looks low.
Yeah.
But there's 100,000 of them, right? So like a 2 ETH floor in the 10K equivalent is like a 20 ETH floor. Like it's still higher. Like the market cap of other deeds is higher than the market cap of mutants. So if you, I don't see an argument where you could call mutants a blue chip NFT and not call other deeds a blue chip NFT. That was the first gripe that I had. But then I was also just going to say that when looking at the market, like what's interesting is, I'm just like, ETH's been super volatile, right? And that tends to be a bad environment for NFTs from what we've seen is like NFTs go down with ETH volatility in the short run. But in the longer run, whenever ETH like crab walks, then like then it's bullish. And so I actually think like the upward price action of ETH is pretty bullish for NFTs, but also as I've said before on the show, like I'm giga bearish on the merge for price action on ETH. I think that this pump leading up to the merge is just like if nothing really changes that fundamentally after the merge in a short term and long term time horizon, but like decreased power usage, etc., like that's a big deal. But in the short run, the decreased issuance is almost like a rounding error. Like it doesn't really matter. And so I don't know why everyone's pumping hard into the merge, but this feels like one of those times where we've seen in NFTs where like things pump into an airdrop. And then the airdrop happens and everything crashes because it was just pumping because people were like, oh, like airdrop, free money. It's the same thing here with the merge is my view.
I think that's probably a pretty sober take. I've seen a lot, like I find it hard to believe that we're suddenly going to go into up only mode when we just experienced our 80% downtrend. You know, look, people throw so much shade when I bring up, you know, like it's a meme. People get so like, you know, giggly and get ready to roast me when I bring up the Bitcoin stock to flow model. But it's basically the only kind of standard thing that we can refer to that makes it really easy to tell where we are in the Bitcoin halving cycle, which does inform this whole market that we're in. Now we have this weird event, aka the Ethereum merge, which actually is, like we talked about, one of the biggest things, like a top three thing in the history of crypto, with the only things bigger being the invention of Bitcoin and Ethereum. So that could throw a wrench in some things, but we have to understand where we're at, and we're still, I think, less than or like 2 years or less, I forget how many total days, it's like 600 days or something, away from the next Bitcoin halving. And so there's going to be tons of like bull traps. There's going to be, you know, rallies and then pullbacks. And I just find it hard to believe that we're all of a sudden going to go into up only mode right now. I mean, obviously, this shit's incredibly difficult to time.
But it's even harder to figure out where the hell we're going with the NFT market. And all of a sudden, when we look at NFTs, I think besides random isolated pumps that have to do with price action, let's say you're a long-term investor in the NFT space, like what are you going to get excited about right now that an NFT does? Like, I feel like the only NFTs that people are going to get really, really excited about are going to be like if Alexis Ohanian puts out an NFT that's all about like that he says, this is my NFT. And I'm just using him as an
example. CCO, man, if they drop CCO on that, man, I'm just aping right in. Like, we got to get it. That means I can create art.
Nick gets it. You just got to CCO everything if you want the ball run to come back. You just got to accept it. Moonbird just
CCO the portal, Nick. What's going on? The transition.
I'm not the artist behind it, so we would need to talk with him, and he would need to make that decision. So that's the only reason that we haven't done it. I was ready to just pull the trigger and say, you know what, fuck it, CCO'd. Take that image, which is relatively complex, and and do with it what you will. Just make some maybe graffiti on the walls of the buildings, and do what you want.
I love it. And Pio, I completely agree with you with like the macro sense of what you said with Bitcoin and NFTs and Ethereum as a whole. But there is still interesting stuff like happening in the NFT space. I mean, like. I can't say the name. Alien. I'm just going to call them
aliens. It's just aliens or aliens.
Aliens. Okay, whatever. What? Aliens. Aliens. Okay. You could have got them for like 2 days at 0.2, and now they're at 0.5. So it wasn't just like, a completely random pump and dump, but that was like a 4X in a day. And if you actually look at like the what the project actually did, it's like, zero royalties. It was free to mint. Like a punks kind of model. I mean, there's some interesting stuff going there. And you mentioned the Digi drop. Not too many people may have the full backstory on that, but that's actually like two famous game designers. They created a new company that got pretty heavily funded, a Web3 game startup called Limit Break. And that was like their first drop. So that's why that one like really surged up in prices. I think the guys were like the game designers behind maybe like Final Fantasy 9 or something like that. They had like a 12-year free-to-play like mobile studio. So there's still some interesting stuff happening in the space. I think that we're kind of just going through a bear market where we have to like mature a little bit, and we have to kind of be patient and wait for the interesting opportunities to develop, as opposed to like the bull market where we could just like throw money at anything it would work. Like right now we really have to kind of like sit on our hands and wait for stuff that like seems significant. Like when you think about all of the people that really liked Eight Aliens, like Brian Brinkman was in our Discord talking about it at 0.2. K Dean, right? Messaged us. He said those guys are legit, that are behind the project. So I think there's still going to be interesting opportunities, but the macro is going to be weak. So we're probably still going to see some, blue chips bleeding and stuff like that. So you really have to kind of just like be patient and take some shots. But I think you're 100% spot on in the macro, sense. Like NFTs were, if Bitcoin's the dad and ETH the teenager, we're over here in diapers in NFT land.
Yeah, straight up. I mean, that was fucking fantastic, Kix. And you're so right. So yeah. Like, I guess the Digidaigaku pump is warranted because they're quality creators and it's a gaming angle. So at least you can say, hey, this is going to be something. My thing on Aliens, okay, is I get it. They're punks. They're OGs. They know what they quote unquote know what they're doing. And I'm not throwing shade, right? But my question is why am I going to buy this? Like, I just view it the same way as crypto dick butts, in a way where a few key people decide that it's good and they buy it and they can kind of like let that fester and create a pump. But I'm not interested in taking risks with projects like that right now. Maybe they can get it to 1.25 ETH floor, right? Like, I just don't like projects where all we're talking about is the potential for the price to go up and there's basically nothing else. Like with that Digidaigaku, at least you can make a case that something else is going on there. You know what I mean? And I just like am not that interested in projects where it's like it's a good team because they bought CryptoPunks a few years ago and they quote unquote know what they're doing. And I just don't know why else you buy the JPEG,
it's closer to cryptodes is what I would compare it to. And there was like there was a little meme there out of it. The distinction is cryptodes at least made some one of ones for different influencers, which was both a good idea and simultaneously infuriating. It's also sort of infuriating the arbitrary floor prices of some of them, where it's like, I mean, ultimately the real question is like, why do people buy some of these things? And there's what's clear is there's a limited number which have gotten to a point where they can retain a high value. And most of that is on the art side, frankly. Like the collectible side is remarkably volatile, and it's hard for any of these things to sustain. So yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see where this pans out, but right now it's hard to get behind some of these individual pumps, and so, and buying into it is just like, it's super volatile. So you're buying into something, you're saying, do I want to hold this thing 6 months from now? And that's a hard thing to say yes to with a lot of these.
Yeah, clap emoji, blue heart emoji, clap emoji.
Jesse, what's on your mind, dude? You used to be active as fuck, and now this market has you know, it's got you on your knees. What's on your mind, Jesse?
Yeah, same deal. I mean, I have been trading actively. I think my theory has been for a while that the ETH action is kind of decoupled from NFTs. Of course, everybody's in crypto, so if there's a catastrophe, they're going to go down and up. But yeah, I really have felt like as we all got hurt so bad that now that ETH is going up, the fact that you can like refresh every day and your money, just if you just have ETH, it keeps going up and keeps going up, feels so much more satisfying than the stress of buying and selling NFTs. So yeah, I don't see much to get excited about at the moment. And then I think there's so many people, new entrants seem to be so skittish that it's hard to get excited about any particular new project. So it is really kind of a double whammy. You know, people are a little bit scared, and then the people that were going to bring new action, you know, no one's going to drop. I think you guys have talked about here, other than Yuga, no, or at least online, no one's going to drop another in the derivative. That's like kind of a dead end. I think people think that's, you know, every other derivative or not derivative, whatever you call the pet project, but you know, the second airdrop. Yeah. The airdrop. No, yeah. That seems like a dead end. And then anybody else that was going to sort of execute a game or whatever is dead. So yeah, I think until September 15th, September 16th, it's going to be relatively quiet. I mean, I was surprised that we even had this nice little bump in volume the past couple of days. So, I mean, obviously people are still interested, but it's really hard to find like a narrative in crypto or meta, whatever you want to call it. And that seems to be lacking still.
Did you see SupDux this morning did an airdrop today, giving pixel art versions of the ducks to all of the holders? And I'm just like, wait, what? Basically, issuing new tokens is like the worst thing that projects can do at this point in time.
And
it's outside. I mean, you can do new ones, but anything that increases the supply is just gonna kill it.
Yeah, and so like for example, someone reached out to me that's like a really talented artist in the space that makes like physical stuff in real life, and they're in the digital world now, and I really like the stuff that they do. And they asked me, what if I made something and we airdrop it as a token to your holders? And I was like, absolutely not. I was like, you can make the physical, right? And we can do like basically what's like effectively a merch collab, right? But like, why would we possibly introduce another token randomly that then has a price on OpenSea forever? The bottom line is you don't want to put stuff out that goes to zero. And we're coming off of a lot of people making mistakes in NFTs. You know, people saw Yuga Labs do the dogs, the mutants, and then more. And they thought, okay, cool. Well, that's the playbook. The difference is there was definitive interest in buying Yuga Labs assets. And the number one reason was actually cultural relevance, which is basically the hardest thing to get in the space. And it's like a lightning strike. You can't really recreate it, or recreating it is insanely, insanely, insanely difficult. And it takes time.
So like when you look at World of Women dropping 20,000 more assets, when you look at Dead Fellas dropping 20,000 more assets without any real reason to buy those assets, all you're going to get is that slow bleed. And then people are going to look at CryptoPunks and they're going to say CryptoPunks are historically significant. They're not really going to worry about the risk associated with Yuga Labs buying them. And they're going to say, out of everything in the whole NFT market, this is what I want to park my money in. And then even with entities that didn't really, quote unquote, dilute their supply too much, because I actually don't think that, for example, Moonbirds having, I thought that there were 20,000 Moonbirds, or like that's what I was thinking of last night. Dude, there's only 10,000 Moonbirds, man. And yes, he fucked up, or you can make a case that there was a fuck up with dropping the oddities, and then now the Ravens are going to come out, and then people are all confused about the CCO thing. But it's like, yeah, even Kay Rose, who a lot of people were thinking was like the golden boy of this shit and really understood how to do it, may have diluted a little bit. It's just not the answer. And I don't know. I look at all these projects that are out and I just start to think like, and then, all right, how about Goblin Town, right? Goblin Town, slow bleed, 1.75 ETH now coming down from 9 ETH. Because I think a lot of people were like, well, you guys were doing some crazy stuff. What's the next thing, right? Like, what's actually the next thing? What's really going on? It's a strange time in the market, and it's a small market. There's only like a few people even making content on the NFT market right now. And when I was talking to Giancarlo last night, the comparison I made is, imagine if you were a Bitcoin content creator in like 2015 or 2014. Like, not only must it have been weird because the audience was so small, but you also maybe felt like you were crazy and you maybe felt like you were actually like losing your marbles, believing in this magic internet money that ran up to $1,000 the year before. And now it's worth like $80 and you're down 90%+. You probably just felt like an idiot. But the people that ended up sticking with it obviously were rewarded in a crazy way, whether it's just holders and accumulators during those periods, which most people are, or if you're actually built, like, you know, quote unquote, building in the space, whether it's content or something else, if you really stick around, you get rewarded coming on the other end. So I just think that we're in this like weird place. And I don't think it's impossible for it to get way, way worse. I totally think it could get way, way worse.
The other thing is, I mean, obviously, just by definition of it being, you know, immutable, permanent, you know, it just, without new people, all these projects just dilute, you know, the entire market. So, you know, all these projects we have, especially with the, when the free meta hit and people are like, oh, we can make money. You know, you can take a flyer, not lose out, and then if you have a dev and just make a project. So all these free projects come out and it's like, you can only sustain so many. So it's, and with such a short attention span, even a good project, go back to Animetas and, you know, then to subtitle, like we can only sustain so many without increasing the number of consumers. I mean, I think someone like Punk's Comics should try to figure out something with a burn mechanism. I mean, the problem there is you have to figure out why would you burn. But if you burn like 10 planets and you can get like a one of one special comic that they, you know, partner with Marvel or someone else, they actually have money to spend. Something better than a sweatshirt. I mean, people should start thinking with, I think about, especially like that. If you have a treasury, start thinking about burning. You can always drop more later. But like you have to kind of think like a macro, on more of a macroeconomic level, and say, okay, we have too many here. If you have, you know, yeah, 10 comics and a whatever, they have so many things I can't even remember. You know, you actually get something real art or access to something really good instead of throwing T-shirts at a Dodger game. You know, kind of cut supply and see if that does something for you.
Yeah, I saw Signal unmuting. Signal, do you have your audio squared away? Can you actually speak now? Nope. Sorry, Sig, we can't hear you. Discord audio is really, really hard. So yeah, I mean, you brought up Pixel Vault. Pixel Vault has like infinite money at this point, you know, when you kind of look at them compared to other NFT projects. So they can actually just stay quiet for a while and then be totally ready to rock when we have the next like kind of wave of adoption, if you will. The other thing that we talk about a lot of times is like when no one new is coming into the space right now. because there's no attention on NFTs. There's kind of no reason for a new person to come in right now. And we need to have advancement in user interface, which will come, right? So when you think about it, user interface advancement will come. And what I think I could see, because right now there's like a narrative of everybody hating NFTs and blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing. But then you think about in a few years, the way that narrative can shift is like if these big entities like Mr. Beast, Barstool Sports, you know, insert, you know, the Nelk Boys, I know they already did an NFT, but like entities in media, in content, in business that have big dedicated audiences, you know, the luxury brands totally could be in play here, like Dolce & Gabbana, like brands that people go crazy for in whatever medium that is. When you start to get actual NFT utility, like where actually having the NFT actually gets you something, right? Which we don't have yet, but we will have inevitably. Just like in the early time with Bitcoin, people would be like, well, what the fuck is this thing even for? Like, blah, blah, blah. Once that actually comes, that's when you hear a narrative shift and you can hear, like, you can almost just picture somebody that's not an NFT participant now, that's not an NFT believer right now, but you can hear them saying, yeah, but actually I bought that NFT because when I bought the NFT, I can do this or I get access to this. And as we get more integrated with the quote unquote metaverse, right, the trigger word, everybody hates talking about the metaverse right now because no one believes in the metaverse. But all of a sudden, when there's actually desirable shit that you can do from a digital perspective, whether it's with VR goggles, augmented reality tools, something, you know, on the internet, that's when NFT utility starts looking pretty good. Go ahead, Nick.
We also have requests for speaking. It didn't work on desktop.
Which I can't see. I can't see those requests.
Oh, I can. So if you want, I can add some of those people up.
1,000%. I'd love it. I just can't see those requests.
No, I know, because you're on desktop. So I just switched to mobile to test this out, and it works perfectly. So I'll just yeah, people can contribute.
That's a direct bug. Think about that. Like, literally, I can't see the hands raised on desktop. Anyway, we got
no. I don't even need to imagine it. I just experienced it, PS. So let me tell you, like, it's a real thing that just happened. I can't see the people, but now I can. So we got people.
We got people, baby. Well, Nifty Nick, I don't know. Like, I always want to know what you think. I always like it when you disagree with me. I don't know. Anything on anything that I just said? Anything?
No, not really. I mean, it's not like I agree with basically what you're saying. I don't know. The bigger thing is, like, what is a move right now that makes money in this market? Like, last year, we were just all making a bunch of money. Even through the beginning of this year, there was some pumps. Where is the action? And I feel like maybe even Easy can comment on this. I don't know. I looked at Solana volume, which is down some as well. And I'd be curious just to know, like, where there's like, we had how many projects? Three projects temporarily pump. Like, and that's what's exciting in the NFT market. That's the entirety of what's going on. Like, it's such a contrast from last year. And the problem is some of the shine is also wearing off at the same time, which just makes this all the more difficult, right? Like, you're seeing some of these projects that aren't delivering anything. And so it just feels like, okay, is all of this just a bunch of slow rugs? You tweeted it. I was going to tweet the exact same thing. Basically, 95% of the projects in this space were rugs, and including a lot of the ones that pumped to significant levels. I mean, what is the Zuki app right now? That's one where.
Bro, what about Neo Tokyo? Like, I think about that project all the time, and that one is like, what have they done in God knows how long? That was an 80 ETH floor at one point.
So some, but there weren't that many sales at those levels, but at least one bozo paid that much for it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, the fact was people weren't even willing to sell. Let's say they cut the floor in half down to 30 ETH. That at 3K, that's $90,000. So, I mean, yeah, like we were at absurd levels, but like all of the hype around that was so absolutely absurd where people are saying, yeah, this makes sense. I think what was like, maybe even for us, and was refreshing for us, was like we just came up to discuss the absurdity of all of this. That was the thing that was like kind of, frankly, the foundation of this show. And now a lot of that bubble is sort of popping. And so the question is, well, what do I hold at these prices, or where's the opportunity to make money? If there isn't opportunity, there was one tweet that, or I saw NFT God had written something. It was like, you, by and large, you lose money if you invested in NFTs, but if you built, 100% of those people have made money, basically, and for better or for worse. And so the question is like, well, what can you do? Like, how do you operate in that space? And I think that's where we really need a lot more of that. Because we were having a conversation. I don't want to mention the YouTuber last night, but we hopped on a call. And one of the things we were discussing was like, outside of Yuga Labs, we couldn't name on maybe one hand the number of people that are properly capitalized and probably developing something substantive. I think what we missed was a lot of infrastructure people that are building stuff. I think of like GemXYZ and GenieXYZ. Yeah, and Premen and some of those others that are like, they're building legitimate things, but like, we need, like, you look at MetaMask and some of these other things, like, MetaMask is like slowly evolving. For literally all of last year, it felt like nothing changed with MetaMask, though. And that's the product that all of us were interacting with. Can you imagine like Facebook not having released anything for just like a year? That when they were pumping.
You bring up something here too. Like you've mentioned, like you were going to ask about the Sol side of stuff. There's been so many developments on Solana. From Phantom was not even around when I got into Sol. Like people were using Solflare and Solit, and now there's mobile applications. I just feel like the development on other networks is slowly outpacing a lot of this stuff on ETH. And for me, that's like where I'm finding other opportunities. Like I've even started looking at other chains for NFTs that still are seeing even more volume. Like Dapp Radar is still showing like growth on some of these other networks. And I think that's where like we could continue to see more development. I don't like the tough part for me is I just feel like when I look back at things like MetaMask and even OpenSea, the rate in which they iterate and develop is so slow compared to a lot of these other chains.
Well, the upside there is also substantial, right? Like if you can get a blockchain out the door right now, you can raise $40, $80, $100 million style. Well, I don't know about this exact market that we're in. But during a bull run, you can raise as much as basically the highest highest NFT projects have raised. The irony there is like the highest NFT projects weren't building a damn thing outside of Yuga Labs, but even they weren't. I don't know that they were building technology, and it's not even clear that they are at this point because what they're investing in is they've partnered with another company that's doing that. I look at Murat Pak. What technology are they building? I think of Pixel Vault. They're not building any technology. They're funding like other gaming agencies, which is what they were looking at acquiring. I think they may have acquired a game studio, but like that's not new development in this space. And so instead, a lot of that stuff is happening in other areas. I don't want to say that it's not happening because there are many like people trying to like do like on-chain innovation, but most of the stuff is. The people that are attracting developers are those that are building like actual blockchains. And then the incentive is so massive there because if you can get other developers to build on it, then that's a huge thing. And that's where a lot of the development ecosystem exists, frankly, at this point. If you think back to like the internet bubble, what we had, and I think of Web 2, for example, What was that? And I'm going to geek out for just one minute, which is what happened there was you had like Gmail came out and Gmail was like groundbreaking. Basically, what they had figured out what to do was how to build a functional JavaScript app, which was something that like did not exist at that point in time. Now we have the majority of the web is being built using that sort of framework. So there was like actual technical development innovation that was happening. Ruby on Rails was something that helped developers build faster. And now people say it's crap, but whatever, I still like it. But the bottom line is there was technical innovation that enabled people to develop. You had AWS, which built cloud computing. In the blockchain space, really all we've seen is there's two areas that exist. You see like the blockchain where we have ETH
creating a merge. So there's a lot of developers working on that. You see layer two development, where so there's a lot of developers operating on that. And then you see EVM compatible layer ones and other layer ones. So you see Solana, you see any other layer one that's existing. I'm blanking on the Avalanche, which
is EVM compatible. FTM, and all the good stuff.
Yeah. So that's where a lot of the action is at this moment in time. And I kind of agree with you, EZ, that some of those apps that are being built there is really where the exciting stuff is. The NFT space is fun, and it's the most entertaining of all of the spaces, and that's why we love it. But the hardest thing is like, if we don't have people that are fundamentally developing technology on this, then it kind of is a house of cards.
Yeah, and just on that, I've said it before, and you get like weird ass like web 2 video game maxis responding. It's like, dude, I never see the curveballs coming. Like, I never see what people are passionate about coming. It's just so random and weird. But I have to think that the easiest thing you can say NFTs directly plug into and provide serious real utility to is video games. That's the easiest thing to point to. It's so easy to see that compared to other stuff, and we're not there yet, but we will get there. And when we,
I think the bridge there, though, VO2 is like the software as a service, like the subscription model.
Yeah, yeah, no,
you just cut out.
Oh, sorry, I'm saying that there's a massive like bridge there where it's like the web 2 software as a service model, where instead of paying a monthly subscription, you get lifetime access by holding an asset, and I think that's still a.
You keep getting
wrecked. We lost you easy,
but I get that.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll just pick up maybe on that exact point. I mean, yeah, it's like the L2 stuff is fine and all the fancy EVM stuff is fine, but yeah, there definitely has to be more consumer facing like apps that are you know, fun, useful, whether they're social media, everybody, you know, you're not going to build the next Twitter overnight, but you can certainly build other apps in the meantime. I think, you know, one click sign on it really is a magical innovation from a user friction perspective, right? The fact that you click on and then you're kind of clicked in, not just, you don't have to, not only do you not have to have your password saver click up, but you also, you know, you're connected to it like, you know, a mini bank, your own mini bank in one click. And it, you know, it pops up every time. So that really is magic. But yeah, there's still, it does seem to be lagging a lot, like what else you can do with that. So yeah, I think that is kind of key. I mean, like it can be pretty lo-fi. I mean, everything crypto, everything like disruptive or crypto is like lo-fi. So it doesn't have to be like amazing. But since you're not going to have massive network effects yet, because people still have to have a wallet, that I could see being, yeah, the next big thing. I mean, there's a million people obviously working on this, but, you know, security is such an issue that, you know, I imagine it's kind of hard that on top of, you know, privacy was already a massive, massive issue for all software. You know, it was already becoming huge post-GDPR and all this privacy stuff with all the leaks. And now when it's like you can have your bank account drained, it's just like it's a huge, you know, huge, huge technical obstacle.
I mean, the irony with a lot of this stuff is like you could build the theoretical, like the NFT side of membership. If you were buying a software product, you don't need NFTs to solve that problem of saying that there's a limited number of subscription spots and you can resell them. You could theoretically recode that and make your own sort of like mini marketplace. I'm not suggesting that that's worth the development, but like, It's an interesting concept. I just don't know if like on-chain NFTs is really a necessity for that to occur. And that's the thing that for me is like, does it really matter? I don't even know. Like there's a lot of these things. We have a number of people also who are on stage.
Dump all people that are requested, dump them all onto the stage. And we're going to just mix it up for the last 24 minutes, everybody. So, I mean, we got D-Gent, who's besties with Kathy Wood. You came on stage. Ready? Here's the roulette wheel on whether people's audio works. All right, D-Gent, first question. Does your audio work?
Can you hear me?
Wow. All right, first question. Done. Audio works. All right, D-Gent, let's rock.
Great. So I can't – so the last 30 minutes, you guys have been having all these conversations about the space without – unbelievable that you didn't mention 10KTF, because a lot of what 10KTF is answering all those questions, because and they just launched a new warm wallet, or they're going to be launching a new warm wallet, which is going to basically be able to allow you to connect your cold wallet to a hot wallet and then use that the hot wallet to transact with their Battletown site. So and that's going to be open. That technology is going to be, you know, eventually available to everyone. So that's a security something they're working on to improve security in this space. And also, you know, if you look at it, what they just did, I mean, you talk about something different. They just rewarded their holders not with another NFT, but with an ape drop. They got $5.5 million with the crate, and then they ended up bringing in twice that, $1.4 million in ape coin. So, and then they only ended up dropping free crates to about 10% of their holders, which it was the, you know, the OGs and the people that were participating in Battletown. So that's I don't see that being done anywhere. And then with your question about what can new people do to get involved in the space, you know, all you need is one game piece to get involved with the project. So, and it's a lot of fun, and it's something to do. You know, when you're involved in this project, you stop worrying about floor places everywhere else and what's going on in the space. It's almost like everything is going up in flames, but you're having the best time of your life. So I'm surprised you guys weren't talking about the project when you're going over all this stuff.
Yeah, of course, 10KTF has a really passionate fan base, and 10KTF, along with Artifact, will, in my opinion, if I fast forward and I zoom out, 10KTF and Artifact will end up being the grailed metaverse wearables, right? And right now, everyone's like, metaverse wearables, what the hell are you talking about? That's not a thing. The metaverse doesn't exist. But in reality, in a few years, it will exist, and this will be the OG metaverse wearable stuff. And it won't matter that it's somebody else's NFT that's on your bag and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, Nick, go ahead.
Well, 10KTF, yeah, they are a grail project, I think, in the NFT space. We turn to them for inspiration. I think also, though, it is absurd the amount that we're paying for. Like, the name of the game in this space is literally don't tell anybody what you're doing. And from that standpoint, it's kind of ludicrous. Well, not completely. If you think of Apple, you don't know exactly what they're doing, although they're launching another phone, you can assume, in September. But outside of that, it's not very clear. Like, it's an odd place to be that we're investing in stuff for a future metaverse where we don't know how long it's going to take to develop. Where we're buying, it was the same conversation we had yesterday about land. 10KTF is interesting just because they have narrative development and they seem to be releasing things on a regular cadence, and they generate excitement for the project. So yeah. I mean, we're fans of it. I own a bunch of different 10KTF items. I haven't bought the combat crates, although I feel like I'm going to end up regretting it. But those were pretty expensive out the gate. But yeah, I think that, 10KTF is a great project. I don't have anything to add.
Yeah. So we got a bunch of new speakers on stage. This is fun because I almost feel like people are more comfortable to come on stage here because it's like a private Discord call versus like blasted out to Twitter. Well, it's not private, it's public, but there's fewer people in here than would be on the morning show. I saw Luna asking if she could come on stage. Come on stage, Luna. Come wild out or whatever you want to do on stage. But anyway, we got... Sick?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you!
I've been frantically trying to get this to work, and in the end, the solution was to download Discord onto my computer rather than use it in browser because the mobile doesn't work. So anyone else is having that problem, the solution is to download the app onto your desktop. Couple of things on this discussion. I think because of the parts of the market that we focus on, so we really focus on the trading side, profit and loss. There's a huge amount of innovation happening in this space. And if you look at the people who are coming into this space, there's a lot of like the exec, VP, senior people at Meta, Google, like all of these companies coming over into this space. And the stories that aren't getting talked about is the infrastructure that's getting built. So you've got, you know, Token Proof, what Wenu is doing, what Zenga, story for Zenga is doing. There's so much happening, but we don't talk about it because that's not a profit and loss game. the infrastructure does need to get better. It does need to evolve before we can go fast. But in the PFP lane, I think we're sort of, you know, coming to a traffic point. We haven't stopped, but the traffic is slowing before we can go fast again. And what's interesting about making money right now, I think, you know, to Pio's point about last year, how easy it was to make money, you know, you guys were hosting the show and literally making money at the same time. And it was very easy to keep up with the space. Making money now is like, the people who I see succeeding are the ones who literally like eat, breathe and shit this space 24/7. Like they are just constantly trading and they're constantly tuned in, which is extremely difficult to do when you're trying to run a business at the same time. So yeah. It's not that there's not money to be made, because there is. And I know plenty of people who are making and losing both at the same time. But these are the people who, like, you know, the NFT space is in their blood, as opposed to you guys, where you just got to a point where if you're not at your computer watching the trades, I think it becomes a lot more difficult to make the kind of money that you did last year. But the opportunities are still there.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, Signal, I'm taken aback. You said a naughty word there. I was shocked. I was stunned. But no, obviously your points are on point. Look, we got new peeps on stage. Bell. Let's first question. Is your audio working, Bell?
I don't know. Is my audio working?
It is.
Woo! All right. Hey, 6 point was absolutely on point. I'm going to add to that a little bit, because we're talking about how onboarding, we aren't getting any new people on here, and we absolutely aren't, I would say. However, a lot of the people that still are sticking around were here during the bull run, but got here just a tad bit too late and weren't able to properly invest. You know, everything was already super high levels at a point that they couldn't. It's right now that ETH price is dropping, or was dropping, and NFT prices are also dropping, that they are the ones that are taking advantage of it. And I think that that's part of the reason, aside from the flippers that were getting into Aitlians, I think I pronounced that right, aside from the people that were going into it just straight for the capability of being able to flip it, those are the people who you see that have been in the space for a minute, who know who the OGs are, who have the hopium of saying, all right, this is one that doesn't have the, you know, I don't have to pay any royalties to get out of it. This is one that the people who are creating it, I believe in, don't really know what they're going to do with it, but I have the expectation or the belief that they know the right people and eventually we'll see something happen. So I think that's part of what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And like the onboarding part is what we're talking about. And I just think that this is how it works. DC Investor was talking about this, how nobody, during periods like this, nobody wants to buy. People want to buy when it, like, they basically FOMO. That's basically what you're talking about. And, you know, when you interact with people that aren't in the space, the idea that you could tell somebody to buy an NFT right now that's not in the space, dude, good luck. Good luck. They're not going to buy it, right? However, once it starts cooking, that's when they'll buy it and basically be someone that's buying right now's exit liquidity. It's just how it works. And time is going to put us in a position to get to that. And yeah, I mean, based on what Sig was saying about the people that are eat, breathing, and shitting the space, those people are also insider trading. They're also in Telegram groups. They're in, you know, Discord groups, and they're just straight up insider trading. And they're, you know, in my opinion, to some capacity, taking part in the, if you want to call it coordination or manipulation of some of these pumps, but I guess, you know, get your money, do your thing. It's just very hard if you're not 1,000% dialed in. We got someone, I don't know if they've come on Twitter before, Category 5. On stage. First of all, Category 5, does your mic work?
What's up? I think my mic works, Pio.
My guy. Yes, it does. What's going on?
Nothing much. Thank you for having me up. I'm a longtime listener. This is the first time I've come up. I own your NFT. I think you guys are great. You guys run a great space.
Thank you, man. Well, hell yeah. What's on your mind?
I want to offer a counterpoint a bit to the land discussion yesterday and just the general bearishness of Mark Cuban and kind of also just the speakers on stage, some people echoing his sentiments. And I hear somebody like Mark Cuban saying Metaverse land is the worst investment in the world. And I can't help but think of guys like Gary Vee, talk about like the early days of Twitter, how when he was starting on Twitter, people would ask him, who the fuck wants to see what you're eating? Who wants to know where you are? Who wants to see a picture of your outfit? And now at 10, 15 years later, that's all we do. That's all that society is based around, social media and status updates. So it's very easy for Mark Cuban to say something like that about Metaverse Land just because of the general market sentiment. Whereas I'm a Metaverse Land owner. I own a lot of land in Decentraland. I'm a DJ. I own a club there. And I also work with a developer collective there. And I mean, in the past 2 to 3 weeks, we've deployed Metaversal activations for Netflix and Snapple, and I think Mountain Dew. And all of these entities are coming into the metaverse. These entities are paying landowners to rent their land, paying developers to develop experiences for them. And just because the people who are on Twitter just degen trading all day trying to look for the next 10x, they're not in the metaverse doing this. They don't see this happening. They don't see this growing. Yes, we have a low number of daily active users, but there are still people like Netflix and huge brands that want to get into this. Goldman Sachs, I mean, it was just in the past couple of weeks, Goldman Sachs predicts that the metaverse market size to be over $12 trillion. That's an insane number. And where is that money going to come from? And it's going to come from owners in metaverses developing experiences. I don't think there is going to be some endless metaverse that's open to everybody to create, because that takes a metaverse takes an incredible amount of infrastructure, server side, developer side to support. And I just don't see that there being enough manpower to support a free open metaverse. There has to be incentive for owners.
There's the internet. So, I mean, I feel like
there are only a few spaces on the internet that you go to because those spaces are good.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Although there's like that number could be like 100,000 places that exist on the internet that are like actually that people go to versus and that includes like even mobile games and other places that exist. It happens in many different forms. But the bigger thing is, and I think what we talk in particular about on this show, is the speculative aspect of it. And I think still to this day, and it comes back to what Pio said at the beginning, basically, is that by and large, we're just seeing a slow sort of drop in the value of a lot of these different assets, primarily because they're so overpriced relative to future value or future utility. Like, you may have a 10 KTF bag that you're going to use in the metaverse. A lot of people have said positive things about Other Deeds, for example, where that was a great experience. But even still, like, what's not clear, I mean, if they do it as one-off events where thousands of people show up, I could see a lot of activity taking place there. But I don't know how many of those people are going to be like playing the game, whatever game materializes, on a regular basis, and how long we have before that happens, and how relevant it is that you have like a skin in Fortnite doesn't cost $20,000, right? Like, that's just not the way that it works. And I can't imagine like a kid not being laughed off for having like a $20,000 Gucci shoes or something like that. Because if you did that in, at least, I don't know, maybe you went to a school where that was acceptable behavior. But I feel like at the school that I went to, you may have gotten jumped for showing up.
I think a big problem with the other side land, which is basically besides Decentraland, Crypto Voxels, and Sandbox, the other side land, we have, that's one of the biggest projects in the space right now. It's a metaverse land project, and we have no idea about the actual utility of the land. How, I mean, I feel like people are buying other side land thinking that it's just going to be a money printer once this game starts, when I don't think that will be the case at all. I think they're trying to build some kind of resource-based kind of economy. And these land parcels, none of them are going to be a money printer. It's just like, just creators are going to have to put in the time to develop these metaversal experiences that people want to have. If you don't have creators developing metaversal experiences, you're never going to have people adopting the metaverse. And yes, we also need better UI, better UX, better onboarding. But I, just to finish up, that Mark Cuban stuff, I think it's a bunch of nonsense. I think there is a lot of money to be had in the metaverse. I'm a testament to that. I have friends that have made a lot of money in Decentraland, not selling their land, but developing experiences for NFT projects, for brands. That I'm just offering my perspective. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, look, I said it yesterday on the show that Mark Cuban is not a thought leader for crypto. That doesn't mean I don't want him on the show. That doesn't mean that I'm not a fan. I'm a fucking fan of this guy. You know what I mean? But that's not the guy that I'm looking. I would rather... All right, here's another thing that you can meme and you can make fun of me for. I would rather listen to what Michael Saylor has to say about Metaverse Land. Even though he's like the Bitcoin maxi of all Bitcoin maxis, I would love to just privately have a beer with Michael Saylor and be like, Mike, give me the real scoop. What do you think of this shit? You know, and get like his real opinion. Because he's someone that, if you can look it up, like 15 or like right when the iPhone came out, or like, basically he's got a long history of predicting shit from a technical perspective that came 100% true. Like, he is able to kind of see 10 years, 15 years out and then place bets accordingly. So yeah. So we got D Salter on stage. I don't think D Salter has come on the show before, or maybe they have a different Twitter name or a different Twitter PFP. D Salter, first question, is your audio working? No, it's not. It's not working.
Bam.
Sorry.
My phone is not working for us. That's, yeah, it was bound to happen. We hit two or three in a row there, so there's no way that you're going to keep getting wins like that.
Yeah. Can't bat 1,000, D Salter, and I see you jamming on that mute button. It's not going to do anything, buddy. Your audio is rugged.
You're down.
Yeah. Steamy J, what the hell's up with that name? There we go. We can hear you, Steamy J. What's going on?
What's good? Following up on your, what's the word I'm looking for? On your outtake on the conditions of the market right now, and the fact that if you're not like fully plugged in 24/7, that there's, you know, that good luck. And I agree with you for sure to some extent, but I would also say, like, there's many people who aren't super plugged in, but like, we all saw aliens at 22. We all saw rare Apepes. And I think a lot of us are in a stage to where we're just fading everything that's new, because we're so used to seeing like, oh, there's tons of utility, or we're so used to our original, like, you know, what we thought were blue chips. Oh, those aren't pumping. So the market is not good right now. And I would say, in my view, there's going to be a whole new wave of you know, quote, you know, top projects that may or may not even be out yet. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think a lot of us are waiting to see the apes and all these huge projects pump. But without being plugged into the market 24/7, this, in my view, there's still tons of opportunity. And then my second point would be, speaking about adoption and like the lowest barrier to entry, I keep seeing that the elephant in the room that nobody's really, well, a lot of people are talking about it if you're in that, but many people are fading ENS, because with ENS, it's just as simple as, oh, people can grasp, go get your username. People can grasp, oh, this is going to be like the new identity. Like, we all are bullish on Ethereum. And meanwhile, you know, many people in the NFT space are fading, just fading it because they don't, it's early, which to me, that's bullish. The fact that we all know it's a thing, but everybody's fading it. And it's the lowest barrier to entry. So that's the point I wanted to make. Because even with the, when ENS was in a full out bull run, you know, everybody was still, most people were still fading it. And then they saw like the what was it? The flag with the numbers, those pumped. And people were like, oh, that was a pump and dump. Meanwhile, there was a bunch of people who they could grasp that. Oh, get my country flag and a number. Okay, I can get that. Tons of people were being onboarded by that. So those are my 2 points.
Yeah. On the ENS front, I just view it identically to domains, like internet web domains and like Twitter, you know, Twitter usernames. Like Farouk's Twitter username is literally at Farouk. Like that's a good you know, that's a good Twitter username. You know what I mean? And Jason Calacanis, his Twitter username is Jason. You know what I mean? So that's how I view ENS. And yeah, like I think ENS is a good thing, but like you have to be creative in thinking like, you know, like I don't think a lot of people are going to pay for steamyj.eth. No offense, right? No offense. It's not the same thing as hope.eth or, you know, cars.eth or nba.eth. And I think that I don't want to say we missed it. There's probably still opportunities to get domains like that, but they're harder to find.
Why do you need NBA.eth? What? With my name, Steamy J, that's not even my .e. If you look at my profile, it's just a single emoji, .e.
People, okay, it's even more difficult.
No, not just that, but it's something people can wrap their head around. It's a username, and a lot of these things, now that there's ENS Vision, a lot of these things have floors on them. That was the whole thing before. ENS has been creeping up, but on OpenSea, there weren't categories, and there still aren't.
So fundamentally, though, my biggest thing, well, there's two things. The use case of ENS domains is still doesn't make a ton. It's at this point, the way that they're being traded is literally like an NFT. I get a custom NFT. That's it. I can basically write my own line of text and mint that and own that within this specific ecosystem. That's the primary utility. Yeah, you can go and write someone's name when you send them money. But like on the technical standpoint, it's annoying when people send you ENS domains because you end up having to look up their wallet address typically when you're like adding allow lists and things like that. The way that when you code it, it doesn't actually function that way. So fundamentally, they end up just giving you more work when they send you an ENS domain. What that said, the one use case that I have seen, which is interesting and I think would be useful, is primarily on the and Jimmy.eth was the one who posted a thread on this, which was basically right now one of the biggest problems is that and the sources of people getting like the Bored Apes hacked and stuff is that they end up having to sign something with the wallet address where they own their ape. And that's just like an attack vector. Like it's so easy. Ultimately those assets should never be touched and that wallet should never be utilized. And what was suggested was there was an idea that was circulated that he had proposed, which was basically you have like, let's say mine is niftynick.eth. That I can have a separate address, the subdomain verify.niftynick.eth, and I can have that point to a different address where I can go sign things on that account, and you know inherently that I own the root, which is niftynick.eth, which holds those NFTs. I'm just using that as an example. And that's something where I see actual utility. Now, that requires an entire like ecosystem to support that approach. And now it forces you to say like, hey, if you want to be secure, well, then this is the way that you do that. So if you could get security as the utility, that would change things. But outside of that right now, there's no other actual true utility out of it because it's not the foundation of where people interact with you. And so, I mean, I guess the other thing is you can look someone up on OpenSea, but you also could have just given them a username. So to me, yeah.
I agree with you, and I think that's most people's take is that they haven't. As far as I know, I don't know any of the speakers that are in the rotation daily that have actually done a full deep dive and can say, hey, this is the bullish case for EMS, because it's a lot of people who are, oh, I heard you can do this. Oh, this is just what you mentioned, Nick. Oh, okay. You know of like one or two cases.
Hold on. You're the one owning it, presenting a bullish use case. So what is the bullish use case? And also, by the way, why choose an emoji? That's one of the most difficult things to like enter into the phone, because then the question is like, what race is the emoji, or like what color is the emoji? I wonder about that booklet, but yeah.
Yeah, for a number of different reasons. One being, just like NFT collections, there's a scarcity aspect to ENS domains now with that there's ENS vision. So that's one thing. Also, in the future, it won't be that you'll have to, this is the idea, that it won't be that you'll have to like find the exact skin color. It'll be more like you're on your iPhone right now. Do you have to know anybody's phone number? Like everything is just based on contact. So, I mean, this future cases, but I'm just saying like,
the first time I contacted, it's definitely not me. Their phone number, but yeah.
But it's not me, but sometimes I'm like, yo, I wish, or hopefully at some point they'll have like a dedicated ENS guy, because it's a thing. It's not here. It's not going anywhere. We're all bullish on Ethereum. It went on a full out bull run, and everybody, and most people's sentiment was still like, oh, I don't really know why that's a thing. Oh, this is stupid. And it's like, okay, have any of these people like really, I wish there was just like a dedicated ENS guy that would come.
Appreciate you presenting the thing. I'm just saying, like, if there's a bullish use case and you're bullish on it, then you should be able to articulate that as well.
Yeah,
I'm not throwing shade at you about that. I'm just saying, like, I own multiple multiple ENS domains, and we try and get it for our company, and it's like it's just a best practice at this point in time. I think we're still just waiting to see that develop out. And I think that there's the potential that it will, but yeah, regardless, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the.
And real quick, like on the subject, you said you want there to be a dedicated ENS guy. I actually want to use this opportunity. I know we don't have our full audience here, but there's enough people in the audience to listen to this. This is the perfect time for there to be a distinction. There would never be a dedicated guy for any project, right? There's not going to be a dedicated Yuga Labs guy, right? Because this show, even though it's on Discord today, we talk about the stories in the market. ENS is not a story in the market right now. We know what ENS is. ENS is the same thing as buying a hope.com, michael.com, buying a Twitter username that is flat. No, it is. And I understand that there's technological capability, but at the fundamental level, when you buy an ENS domain, you are buying po.eth, you're buying something.eth, an emoji.eth. That's what you're buying. You're essentially domain squatting. I understand that there's technological innovation that comes with it that's paired with Ethereum. I'm not questioning that, right? But that's what it is, and it's not a main story in the space. If all of a sudden the volume on ENS goes crazy and there's a new trend on ENS, then that's worth discussing. But we've had people we've had people that wanted to come on the show, and there was at least one person that actually tried to tag on to Signal's weather report to provide daily updates on the random NFT projects that they happen to own. So that's just not how the show functions. What? And if anybody ever feels
where did this go?
I can't tell if you're talking because of like your audio and everything. I'm just trying to point something out. Are you talking about like, are you asking questions about your audio, Nick? Or are you like directing those questions at me? So what I was saying is the show is not about, you know, discussing an individual person's investment portfolio, right? It's discussing, you know, the stories of the space. If someone has a bullish case on something, then they can totally come and present something. But it's not, there would never be a dedicated person that is there to talk about 10KTF every single day, for example, right? So, all right.
That's actually my point, is that it's not a dedicated PFP project. It's a whole ecosystem. I'm not saying, oh, somebody should come on and pump specific NFT project.
You were just saying someone who's done a deep analysis, someone from ENS who could speak to like the maybe some of the broader implications of it.
Like you guys know Daniel Baez, but somebody like that, like it'd be great to have just somebody who is like, you know, actually has done it. It's not me, you know.
He's just
an example. That's okay.
Yeah, well, we're wrapping anyway. We're over time. So, ladies and gentlemen, this was our Discord show because Twitter rugged us. So thanks for joining, everybody. I'm definitely pumped about the turnout of people that were on the show today here in Discord. And if you haven't joined our like Discord, you know, the token gated Discord for holding a portal, like if you're here as a public person and you don't own a portal, you definitely should get one, not only for the Discord, but that's like one reason to get one. So yeah, thanks for joining, everyone. Catch you guys next time.